everyone. I'm Gary Noll. This is the Progressive Commentary Hour. Today, continuing with our Conversations with Remarkable Minds series, the theme, the national security state and its control over Washington and hence the American people. My guest, Danny Sheehan, is one of our nation's most important and influential constitutional and public interest lawyers. During the past 45 years, he has handled such public interest cases as the Pentagon Papers, the Watergate break-in, Iran-Contra, and the Silkwood murder case, and he has represented victims of the Three Mile nuclear disaster and fought against the American Nazi Party on hate crimes. Recently, Danny has been the lead attorney on behalf of the Native Nations at Standing Rock and handled the dismissal of the case against Chase Iron Eyes for inciting a riot and felony trespassing. He is the founder of the Christic Institute and the Romero Institute, the latter being a nonprofit public policy center in Santa Cruz, California. Danny holds law degrees from Harvard University and later returned to Harvard Divinity School, and he is the author of The People's Advocate. His websites are danielpsheehan.com and romeroinstitute.org. Nice to have you with us today, Danny.
Terrific, Gary. Happy Martin Luther King weekend.
Thank you. Danny, I'm concerned about several things. I'm going to touch upon maybe five of them, and during our discussion over the next 55 minutes, hopefully you will weave your thoughts around these important and not just existential issues, but primal issues to our survival. Right now, for example, we are engaged in identity politics as I have never seen. The Democrats have become enamored with Robert Mueller, anything to impeach or disrupt or remove Trump. It's understandable if you don't like Trump. I don't like Trump. I don't think he has the intellect, the capacity, the humanity, or the wisdom to be anything. And yet, he was elected. So if you want to remove him, fine. Then find a candidate who has all the qualities he is lacking and put that person in a position of power. But in the process, the same people in the media, the New York Times, the Washington Post, the Chicago Tribune, the Boston Herald, Miami Herald, the major papers that are respected, and their journalists, and all told, over 1,000 journalists, have instead lined up and simply repeat talking points. They do not blame Obama or Hillary Clinton or the National Security State or the Defense Department for the disasters in Yemen, the disasters in Libya, the disasters in regime change, which is proven now by the emails from WikiLeaks, in the regime change in Honduras, regime challenge in Ukraine, and other countries where we have meddled in their affairs to meet our geopolitical needs. Not a whiff of comment or criticism. You don't see any of the major media. You don't see 60 Minutes, Dateline, Nightline 2020. Now, these are important and respected investigative journalist programs, one showing the carnage occurring in Palestine and the intrusion upon their lands and by the settlers. You see nothing at all because the moment you utter a single word, you're classified as an anti-Semite, and hence the subject is simply off the table. Now, we'll be speaking about the national security state. So that listeners can better understand, when we speak of the national security state, we are referring to the ideology and institutions established under President Truman's National Security Act of 1947. Originally, it comprised the CIA and the Defense Department. Today, I would include the FBI, the National Security Agency, and Homeland Security. I would refer to a book written back in 1992 by Jack Nielsen Palmyra, entitled Brave New World Order, which describes the national security state as the military and intelligence being the highest authority in the land and that exerts more influence over political and economic policies than any other federal agency. It represents the facade of supporting democracy and holds an image of protecting freedom. But history shows it often acts against it and is operated in the shadows of complete non-transparency. It is accountable to no one. Even when high crimes and misdemeanors have been proven by whistleblowers, at least a dozen, not one person was brought to justice who committed the crimes, and everyone who exposed the crimes were prosecuted under Obama. Now, just stop for a moment and think about that. Let's just focus on just that issue. We are led to believe that whenever an illegal order is given in the military or anyone else, and this came from Nuremberg, that you no longer can say, I was just following orders. You have the right to disobey orders. You have a right to intervene if what a person is suggesting or demanding represents a crime against humanity. Well, when we illegally spy on every single citizen and then Clapper gets up and lies before Congress, nothing is done to him, but the person who exposed that connection was seriously challenged. In fact, everyone who's exposed every crime has paid the penalty, gone to prison, lives destroyed, bankrupted. So we take the people who did no crime but expose crimes, and we punish them. What kind of Kafka charade are we engaged in? And the media are smarter than what they are reporting. I don't listen to anyone at MSNBC because I consider them so totally compromised and illegitimate in their stories. Same with all the networks, all of them. I can think back to people such as Martin Luther King, Bobby Kennedy, John F. Kennedy and others, Malcolm X, who posed a threat to reveal the actions or raise public protests against its interest. These people were then deemed enemies by the military and intelligence entities who are obsessed with enemies, real or imagined, both domestic and international. And they always claim that what they're doing for a higher purpose. I can also think of individuals such as Alan Dulles, a former CIA counterintelligence chief, James Angleton, FBI head J. Edgar Hoover, Oliver North, and others as exemplars of the national security state. And we should remember that former FBI director Robert Mueller was also entrenched in the security state as well. Right now we're witnessing something remarkable. We are engaged in, at this moment, a new trend. In the past, it was the Democrats or the liberals within the Democratic Party who were often the most critical and held the greatest suspicions against the national security agencies. Just go back to the hearings in the 1970s, the church hearings, for proof of that. Now it is the Democratic Party that is presenting itself as the champions in its efforts to get rid of Trump. Even Robert Mueller, a registered Republican, has become the Democrats' new hero. We saw this in Hillary Clinton's campaign as she presented herself as a hero. And she became the national leader for a new Cold War against Russia. Russia does not represent a threat to America. Vladimir Putin is far more conscious of the consequences of a war with anyone. And so is China. And they're both partners, by the way. So you can imagine if we couldn't beat the Taliban riding around Afghanistan on horseback, on small vehicles and bikes, and 17 years later, we haven't done a damn thing except strengthen them. They control more of the country than ever before. Could you imagine the consequences of getting into a conflict with people who could destroy our entire electronics grid, turn off all the power in the United States? And they're both nuclear powers. They would kick our ass. And then what would these people say? Because Hillary and Bill Clinton and Obama, they're super war hawks. And they support the entire military establishment in Washington around the world. The Democrats have increasingly become America's new hyper-vigilant war party. Just last month, we could have gotten out of Yemen. However, too many Democrats voted in favor of continuing our genocide there. So, Danny, in just 2 years since Trump took office, we have seen a huge redirection among the rank-and-file leaders of the Democratic Party, all done in an effort to remove Trump. Please explain the shift and take us behind the scenes to show us what is not being reported about this Democratic alliance with a national security state. The forum is yours.
Thank you, Gary. Yes, this is something that is extraordinarily troubling. I start my observations by acknowledging that Donald Trump is completely incompetent as a president. He not only knows nothing about governance, the appropriate constitutional processes for governing, he knows nothing about world politics, he knows nothing about even geography in the world. He's basically ignorant of that. And he, besides that, he has an astonishing psychological problem of megalomania and an egocentrism. And he's a very dangerous person to put into the presidency. We've talked about before how it was that the Republican Party in 2016 became so convinced early in 2015 that Hillary Clinton, the Secretary of State under Obama, was going to be the Democratic Party nominee, that they chose to set up a process of super accelerating their selection process for their Republican presidential candidate, to the point where what they did is they established a new set of rules that any one of the beginning 13 candidates for the Republican presidential nomination, whichever one of them got the most votes other than the other 12 in a given state primary, would get all of the delegates from that primary. There was no proportional sharing based upon the will of the people, so that one state after another, where no more than 18 to sometimes 20% of the voters in the Republican Party voted for Trump in the primary. That means over 80% of all of the Republicans wanted somebody other than Trump. Trump still kept winning all of those delegates. And so that when the Republican Party saw that he was in fact winning all of the delegates, they just robotically turn over into begin to accept him as their candidate, even though they knew he was irresponsible. They knew he was degenerate. They knew that he was a misogynist against women. They knew that he was a racist. You know, they knew he was completely incompetent. But because they had gotten into these identity politics that we're talking about here, that they just wanted to get their party to win. So they thought they could get him to agree to give a major tax breaks to the wealthiest 1% of people in the country, reduce the major corporate income tax, and eliminate the death, what they call the death tax, the heredity tax. You know, they put him in. And no matter how much he displayed his utter incompetence and recklessness, they just continued to actively support him. And as we know, the majority, the vast majority of the Republicans in the United States Senate and in the then Republican-controlled House would just woodenly do whatever it is he wanted to do, no matter how ridiculous it was. And so what happened is that the Democrats that had, as you point out, previously been critical of the national security state institutions, such as the Central Intelligence Agency and its covert operations, assassination programs, drug smuggling, et cetera, the NSA and their reckless overreaching and electronic surveillance against our citizens, et cetera, the national security court system that was issuing warrants to break into people's homes and wiretap their telephones with no probable cause to believe that they'd engage in any kind of crime at all, that Democratic Party began to start to champion the various institutions of the national security state because Donald Trump because of his incredible incompetence, and he's a negative person. He thrives on negativity and dialectical confrontation with people. And so every single time any one of the national security state institutions did not agree with him or allow him to do something he wanted to do, which was generally unconstitutional, he would start attacking them. He attacked the FBI. He attacked the National Security Agency. He attacked the Central Intelligence Agency. He attacked the Homeland Security people. He started attacking everybody. And that's just something you don't do in Washington, D.C., which brings us to our major point, was that everybody in Washington, D.C., since the passage of the National Security Act of 1947, has lived in fear of the national security state. J. Edgar Hoover, all the way up until his death in 1972, you know, was secretly spying on members of Congress in both houses, was spying on all major national people in the country that he didn't like, you know, celebrities, political people, you know, anybody that he didn't like, he would start sending FBI people in to spy on them. The United States military was actually assisting them. They would deploy military people in military intelligence to spy on American citizens and even members of the government, cabinet members, and et cetera. And J. Edgar Hoover was keeping all of those files on them. And he was doing it in the name of national security, under the rubric of national security. And it wasn't just because he thought that they were a potential agents of Russia or communists, but it was clear that he was targeting people who were socialists of any kind. He was attacking people who were liberals. If anybody was just too liberal, the people in the national security state viewed them as subversive and inadequately patriotic, and that they were there. So that this institution that had developed from 1947, all the way on up and through various scandals. Obviously, the Watergate break-in, when it was discovered that the burglars that were in the Watergate hotel were employees of the Central Intelligence Agency, and not just James McCord, but also the four Cubans that were arrested with them were all guys that worked for the CIA. But what the Democratic Party did is the Democratic Party, you know, while they were investigating all of this, they refused even then to reveal what the deepest secrets were of the national security state apparatus. They avoided the massive drug smuggling that the CIA was engaged in. They touched upon one of the more sensitive areas of there being assassination programs, but they limited those almost exclusively to just Castro and Lumumba. And some indications of the Trujillo of trying to kill him. But the fact of the matter was they realized that the Central Intelligence Agency's Operations Directorate had a massive assassination program going on. And they completely concealed the fact that it was being funded substantially by heroin trafficking out of Southeast Asia. And anyone in the public interest community that tried to point the facts out and show the evidence of this was in fact targeted by the national security state, and the Democratic Party would absolutely abandon you. If you tried to point this out, if you went too far, both the Republican and Democratic Party would ostracize you as being somehow some kind of a conspiracy theorist. And so when Trump actually got into office, and the Democrats found him alienating the FBI, the CIA, the National Security Agency, the Homeland Security people, and all that, that what they did is they've made a terrible tactical mistake here, in my opinion. They have begun to heroize these agencies as if they were the savior of the country. They've get guys like Brian Williams, on MSNBC. He actually would ask questions like, well, you know, in light of the fact that the FBI and the CIA are the backbone of our American democracy, isn't it awful that Donald Trump criticizes them the way they do? And the Democrats come on one after another. They line up to get on the show to say, oh, yes, I am a great defender of the national security of the United States. I am a great believer in the FBI and the CIA. And now they're spending hours every night over and over again bringing on former CIA people, former FBI people. One of the guys that Brian Williams brings on almost all the time is that he used to be the chief of staff for the Central Intelligence Agency and later the chief of staff of the United States Pentagon. And he brings him on as the stalwart spokesman for American democracy and former FBI agents. And they're all doing it now. And so the fact of the matter is, in my judgment, as a trained constitutional attorney, the founder of the Harvard Civil Rights Law Review back in 1968, the attorney in dozens of cases over the past 50 years pointing out the unconstitutional patterns of conduct on the part of these agencies, you know, I am watching what's happening here with Mueller in horror. You know, I mean, he breaks into the offices of the lawyer of the president. He threatens to indict the son of the president. He investigates people who were the campaign people for the president, all looking all the way back into 20 years in their past for things that had absolutely nothing to do with any potential impeachable offense on the part of the president, but just to try to get criminal charges to be able to bring against these people so he can lever them up and say, look, I'm going to put you in jail for 20 years for your failure to pay income tax or for you, you know, defrauding a corporation or you're refusing to register as an agent for a foreign country when you were doing lobbying to them. And what he does is he builds up a rap sheet against these people of threatening to put them in prison for 20 years and then starts making deals with them that, look, I will not put you in prison for 20 years if you'll, in fact, rat out Trump. Now, again, I hasten to point out that I think Trump is a complete incompetent mentis. I think he needs to be impeached. I think he needs to be removed from office. It is absolutely irresponsible for the regular Democratic Party leadership, Chuck Schumer and Nancy Pelosi and Steny Hoyer and the others, leaving this guy in office. And I do believe that a lot of the new Democrats that are coming in, a lot of the 100 women who are in there now, a lot of the more progressive people that have been elected here in 2018, they're going to put maximum pressure on to actually impeach Bush or impeach Trump and get him out of there, and override the regular Democratic Party that is making this terrible decision that what they want to do is they want to leave him in office for two more years, all the way up until 2020, and they want to continue to heroize the FBI and Mueller and the CIA and others so that they can come into power, getting him thrown out of office. And they're going out of their way. Two things I want to point out here. The Democrats are going out of their way to try to characterize him as a single rotten apple. That he is mentally ill, they're saying, that he's a scallywag, he's a criminal, he welches on his debts. And number two, they're even encouraging, and in fact Mueller is responding, to weave a narrative against Trump that actually characterizes him as an agent, a virtual secret espionage agent for Russia. Because they're trying to not only curry favor with all of the liberals and all the progressives in the country, but they're trying to whittle away at the base of Trump, even with this 15-18% of the people who will vote for him no matter what he does. They're trying to be able to undermine him as a basic traitor to the United States, as unpatriotic and a traitor. And they're going to and so that's clearly what Mueller is doing. He's weaving a narrative characterizing Trump as a traitor to Russia. And they're going to say, well, he was either a witting agent for Russia or an unwitting agent for Russia, or they're getting ready to do this happy phrase now, a half-witting agent for Russia. And they're going to go back in. They're going to point out, which I think is true, that he, Trump, was getting loans, sweetheart loans, from major oligarchs in Russia who were associates, close associates of Putin. And he was getting sweetheart loans to help build major Trump centers, hotels and condominiums around the world in resort centers. And in fact, he was laundering money for the oligarchs. They would purchase, for example, 10 condos in one of his new major condominium complexes or Trump Towers, and they would purchase that for $6 million. Then they turn around and sell it for $4 million. And they were just laundering money that they had embezzled in Russia. And what Mueller is going to be pointing out is that this compromised Trump. It compromised him toward these oligarchs, and to the extent to which they were close associates of Putin, that he was doing favors for Putin. And they're even going to do the narrative of the fact that, well, even Trump thought he was not going to win against Hillary Clinton. And so he was using the entire campaign and his campaign staff to curry favor with Putin and with Russia so that he could end up getting a good deal to build the Trump Tower in Moscow. Now, all of that is true. All of that is true. But the self-conscious effort to weave all of that narrative into a charge that he was a witting, agent, espionage agent for Russia is really attempting to develop a simple-minded charge against him that they're thinking even the great unwashed, the 15 to 18% who basically support Trump woodenly and in a silly manner, are going to cut bait with him. And that's what they're doing right now. And so the Democrats are trying to get everybody on the other side of the ball from Trump so that they can join together with the CIA, FBI, Homeland Security, NSA, all of the National Security State people. They're going to cuddle up to them, and they're going to push Trump out and try to show that he's completely isolated, completely unsupported, and thereby conceal the fact that Trump is really just the full-fledged manifestation of the lesser angels of our American nature that have been operative, and you and I have talked about this in past shows, that have been operative just below the surface in American culture ever since the founding of the American Constitution with Alexander Hamilton and the financiers and the bankers. They were all basically extremely conservative, favoring a ruling aristocratic elite. They're the ones that restricted in the Constitution the ability of regular people to vote, even for the United States Senate people and the presidency. It took us decades to get that amended in the Constitution so that element could get pushed back. And they rose to the ascendancy during the robber baron era. We've talked about that before. They established virtual complete dominion over the government of the United States, got the government of the United States, the instrumentalities of the government of the United States to engage in foreign expeditionary forces down into Latin America, over through Nicaragua, had almost 80 major incursions into Latin America over a 100-year period. All at the behest of the government, all at the behest of these major corporations. And what they're getting ready to do now, the regular Democratic Party, and by that I mean the people I'm talking about, Nancy Pelosi and Chuck Schumer and Steny Hoyer and the leadership in the Congress, are going to all mobilize to try to nominate Joe Biden. And they're going to be willing to have Kamala Harris be his vice presidential candidate. And they're going to be coming in. They're going to say, look, Joe, because of his age, is going to agree to run for just one term to get things back to normal. That's going to be the major play going on here. Let's get everybody aligned against Trump, characterize him as a single bad apple push him out as a basically mentally ill, degenerate, racist individual, and try to maintain the respect for both the Republican and Democratic Party. The Republican Party is going to be willing to step back one step, nominate John Kasich, obviously from Ohio. He's probably going to pick what's her name, the lady from North Carolina that was the United Nations ambassador to be his vice president, presidential nominee. And so the Republicans are going to run respectable people in the sort of the mainstream of Republicanism against Joe Biden and Kamala Harris. And the Democrats plan to win, and they've made friends now with the NSA and the CIA and the National Security State people. And so they're going to want to get everything back to normal, which is going to be like it would have been if Hillary Clinton had won. And, you know, they're going to all be in bed with Goldman Sachs. They're going to be in bed with all the Wall Street banks. They're going to be in bed with the insurance companies. They're going to try to avoid having, you know, health care for all. They're going to try to maintain Obamacare, which is basically a huge giveaway to the major insurance companies. Now, there's going to be another dynamic functioning here, and that is going to be the upsurge of the progressives inside the Democratic Party and the Progressive Caucus. They're going to obviously they're being led now, you know, obviously by Bernie Sanders and Elizabeth Warren, and others are going to be on board supporting this kind of more liberal to progressive wing. You know, we've got Alexandria Cortez now, Ocasio-Cortez, who's a spokesperson for a new progressive social democratic agenda. And I believe that the primary contest that's going to be going on between now and November of 2020 is going to be a contest between the uprising progressives, the so-called justice Democrats, and the regular Democrats inside the Democratic Party. And that's if the progressives can rise into the ascendancy, it's going to make the election in 2020 much closer against Kasich the lady from North Carolina. That's going to be much closer, but they're still going to win. They'll still win by 6 to 8 points, you know, but the Democrats want to win by 15, 18 points. And I believe they're going to have Trump out of here, out of the picture. I think he will be impeached. I think that when Mueller finishes weaving his narrative and characterizing Trump as an individual scallywag and, in fact, a traitor, and characterizes his administration as a gathering of traitors that were trying to make good with the Soviet Union, with Russia, and they're gonna leapfrog from the fact that Trump really just basically thought he was going to lose and was currying favor with Russia so he could establish a better business relationship with them after he lost. They're going to try to translate that entire thing into him being an agent for Russia and push him out the door and want to get Joe Biden and Kamala Harris elected to just get things back to normal and try to reestablish the Democratic Party just to the right of center. Just to the right of center. They may be forced to drift back into the very center, but they don't want to give up that position to the right of the center. They want to isolate the Republican Party to the hard right. The Republican Party is going to be trying to pull its way back to being just sort of in the middle of the right end of the spectrum. You know, with the Democrats just barely to the right of center, they're going to try to reestablish that normalcy. So That's and in doing so, the regular Democratic Party is trying to curry favor now with the FBI and the CIA and Mueller and Homeland Security, and they're still beating the war drums, and they're falling into this thing of characterizing Russia and pushing Russia into, you know, I've said many times when we talked before, the reason that Putin is acting the way he is because the United States, under W. Bush and James Baker and Dick Cheney, and then also under Obama and Hillary Clinton, totally violated their promise that they made to Gorbachev. Gorbachev agreed back in 1991 to sign an agreement releasing all of the republics of the Soviet Union as long as the United States agreed that they would not try to recruit them into NATO. And James Baker and W. Bush gave their word that they would not do this. And as soon as W. got in, they just sallied forth and began to do that. They began to recruit one of the republics after another to join NATO and began to surround NATO on the western, or surround Russia on their western border. And when they made the move to finalize the entire encirclement by going after the Ukraine and taking Crimea, which was the only warm water port remaining for Russia, then Putin acted and moved in and had a plebiscite taken, which showed, in fact, that well over three quarters of all of the people in the eastern half of the Ukraine wanted to remain associated with Russia. They did not want to become associated with Europe, even though the people in the eastern portion of the Ukraine did want to. And so that's what's really happening here. And so this dangerous compromising, we're going to live to regret this. The Democratic Party is now compromising in cheering on Mueller to engage in conduct. You know, he has open-ended grand jury sitting. And using the grand jury, which was designed historically as a protection of targets of government investigations, the grand jury was supposed to be impaneled after the king's bench or the king's prosecutor had decided that he wanted to bring charges against an individual citizen. The grand jury was supposed to be invoked on behalf of the people to pass judgment on that indictment. But now what they're doing is, because the grand jury had the authority to issue subpoenas to do additional investigation, which the king's prosecutor may not have done, to prove the innocence of a target of a criminal investigation, what they're doing now is Mueller and the United States Attorney's Office and the prosecutors have commandeered the grand jury process, that they're using grand juries to drag people in under subpoenas from the grand jury to hold them in contempt if they don't rat out all of their friends and neighbors, you know. And this is the conduct of a national security state, you know, breaking into people's lawyers' offices, raiding their files, you know, arresting their children and prosecuting them to try to roll up the parent, you know, setting up grand juries, dragging all of your associates in. You know, that every single associate you've worked with, and now they're penetrating the most confidential communications of a president. They're in the process right now of dragging in the translator for the president, who sits in a private meeting between the president and a foreign head of state, and they're now subpoenaing the translator to come in and tell them what was said in confidence between the president and a head of a foreign state. Now, that I can see that they'd be tempted to do that in the case of Trump and Putin, but they're not being adequately reflective on what the damage is that's being done to institutions. You know, the Constitution is in the process of being kind of stretched under the point of breaking here, all in order to get everybody on board to get rid of Trump. Now, Trump has committed a whole series of plain sort of garden variety criminal acts, from embezzlement and extortion and money laundering and a whole series of others. They could clearly bring a federal criminal racketeering charge against him and a bunch of his cronies for the things that they've been doing. I'm quite an expert on the Federal Racketeering Act. We brought the Federal Criminal Racketeering Act charges, you know, that broke the whole Iran-Contra scandal open wide and forced Ed Meese to come forward and try to ask for a special prosecutor to limit the scope of our investigation. So I'm familiar with these things. I have a lot of practice in this area. And I'm saying we need to be extremely careful about what's going on here. People need to write law review articles about this. They need to chastise Mueller. They can't be afraid of being, oh, if you chastise Mueller, you're just on the side of Trump. You know, I'm not going to get intimidated by that kind of stuff. You know, and just for me to be saying that some of the things that are being done to Trump are not only unfair, but they're violative of major practices inside our constitutional system. And it doesn't mean that I support Trump. I say over and over again, you know, I think Trump ought to be impeached. I think he's committed impeachable offenses, but they're much more narrow and much more mundane than this fantabulous theory that they're going after him on, is that he's basically a functional agent of Russia. What they're doing is the Democratic Party is resuscitating red baiting. That's what they're doing. I mean, they're red baiting the President of the United States, and they're joining in with the likes of the ghost of Hoover and McCarthy and all of those people. They're re-invoking the kind of activity that was engaged in by McCarthy, and they're trying to take advantage of characterizing, I think, Trump's naive and stupid and, you know, self-serving effort to try to ingratiate himself with Russia to get this good business deal. They're basically accusing him of being a Russian agent and secret agent. You know, that because it's easy to dance to. It'll fit on a bumper sticker. You know, even Trump's supporters, ignorant and vile as many of them are, not all of them for sure, but some of them, they're going to try to destroy the entire political base of Trump by weaving this particular narrative. I think it's dangerous. I think that it's giving too much praise and too much central authority to the national security state people. You know, I mean, if they're not heroizing Mueller, former FBI director, as the champion of the world, they're doing Mad Dog Mattis as being the champion of the whole world, or, you know, his chief of staff, you know, a former military officer. You know, they're basically heroizing some of the major players in the national security state, you know, in whose interest it is to rekindle a new Cold War against Russia, instead of trying to overcome here at the end of the initial Cold War, you know, to try to overcome this dichotomy with Russia, you know. And that's a terribly dangerous thing that's going on right now. And I think intelligent people, libertarians and liberals, are afraid to bell the cat here, to name the beast, to be able to identify the danger that is being raised in the overreaching that is going on in order to get rid of Trump. We can get rid of Trump easily.
Danny, I do not agree with very much that Sean Hannity has to say. I find him to be very, very pro-militaristic and pro-police, the militarization of the police and the military-industrial complex, among other things. But on one single point, I found him to be spot on and accurate. It was nearly 2 years ago that Sarah Carter and Greg Jarrett brought forward, along with some others, a story that was able to be proven that everything involved this was false, that Hillary Clinton had committed crimes, they were proven crimes, and this whole charade, which was instigated also by James Comey, who was FBI director and a close friend of Mueller, they chose not only to exonerate her, and which was, in my opinion, one of the most egregious acts that anyone could engage in, but this entire dossier that was leaked to the media by Comey, which itself is a crime, and he should have been prosecuted, and a whole coterie of individuals within the Justice Department, Rosenstein and others, all worked and together like a cabal to see that Trump was thrown out so Clinton could become president. Why? Well, what would be the motive? Well, how about this? Not a single major CEO supported Trump. No industry supported Trump.
Right.
The and all of Wall Street supported Clinton. The military-industrial complex, Clinton. The energy cartels, gas and oil, Clinton.
Mm-hmm. Yes, yes.
Dictators around the world, including the sordid affairs of the prince, crown prince in Saudi Arabia, supported Clinton. The foreign governments that are utterly corrupt, like the British and the French, Clinton. And also our big agra and supporting GMOs, yes. Clinton. Yep. The pesticide makers, Clinton. The pharmaceutical industries, Clinton. The private prison system, Clinton. Asset forfeiture, Clinton. So virtually everything that is wrong, criminal, or banal about our society supported Clinton.
Yes.
And she embraced them. And so that dossier has been proven to have been false. There wasn't a true line in it. So how is it that the people who created a false, and this was the Democratic Party, how is it that by creating a false dossier and working within the FBI to do so, the FBI actually hired Steele, the man who wrote this, so the FBI is engaged in creating a false dossier on Donald Trump, and then they take that, including James Comey, takes that false dossier before judges, FISA judges, to be able to spy on some of the people around Trump. And that is where Mueller's power came from as a special prosecutor. So everything that Mueller is doing is based upon a lie. Why is it the media has chosen not to say a word about this? And this reminds me of something you could expect in the 1950s under Stalin trials, or in the 1960s under the Stasi regime in East Germany, not under our democracy. Your thoughts?
Yes. Yeah. No. It's a very serious problem, because what happened is that in that dossier, you'll note what it really shakes down to, the most fundamental issue in that, aside from the, you know, having prostitutes pee on him and stuff like that, you know, the charge really was, is that it raised this suspicion that Trump was operating as an agent or at the behest of Russia and Putin. That's where it came from. And what happened is, I think they seized upon that concept, that meme, if you will, as being the kind of thing that if you could weave a narrative around that and get that theme put forward as the frame of the charges against him. You know, it's what's it said from Berkeley that George Lakoff in his advising that, you know, in dealing in politics, you have to find the simplest frame that you can, and you frame your position on that. Now, the fact is, Trump does that all the time, and Trump lies constantly, you know, and doesn't have the slightest regard for the truth, and is an imbecile, and needs to be removed from office. All of that is true. But one of the things that you learn in law is that, they say bad facts makes bad law. And the fact of the matter is that what they're trying to do here is they're trying to have such a complete slam dunk case against him that they're actually into the place of spinning pieces of information to try to make it fit into their thesis. It's not unlike the O.J. Simpson thing with having the detectives place the blood on the socks. You know, they took the samples of O.J. at the police department and then doctored a pair of socks and then left them at his home and then pretended they found them at the home. And then, and I know about this because F. Lee Bailey is the one that pointed this out, and I was in Bailey's office, is that, look, that the police tendered to the jury a pair of socks with O.J.'s blood, or his wife's blood on them, rather, his wife's blood on his socks, which they said they found at his home. And all Bailey had to do is show that blood sample has formaldehyde in it. And it's clear that it was taken from a sample at the scene of the death and put in formaldehyde as a piece of evidence, and was then doctored on the socks. And so they
was that Mark Furman?
Yeah, Mark Furman, the same guy that planted the gloves, you know. And so that what they did is that because of the fury of the police, mainly racistly motivated against O.J. because he was such a hero and everybody loved him and he had a beautiful white wife and all the things they resented, you know, they overreached. And this is the major danger that is being raised here. They're attempting to overreach here, and I think in weaving this narrative of Trump being a communist spy or a Philby, this is an overreach. He's a cretin. He's an ignoramus. He's a degenerate. He's all kinds of things, and he's incompetent as a president, and they should remove him. And all of that together constitutes legitimate impeachable grounds for removing him, and the Congress can do that. But to try to weave together this other narrative, now there's a place, I'm trying to remember exactly where it was, there's a thing on the internet that has been put together by a group. It's actually a group of Falun Gong people that are from China. They're expatriates from China, and that they've got an organization, and they spent hundreds of thousands of dollars putting together the weaving together of the counter narrative. That this whole thing has been a plot on the part of the national security state powers that be, and the major industrialists who don't like Trump and disagree with his policies on tariffs and stuff, that they've put together, have woven together a complete narrative of how this entire thing has been fabricated against him. I'm trying to remember the name of the group, but it exists. I can find it and I can give it to you after the show, but they have put together a multi, maybe even a million dollar thing they put on the internet, weaving together a whole narrative of various, like 400 data points that they put into this narrative. Probably 350 of them are all true, and pointing out where people have lied on the other side, those FBI agents that were inside that were saying they're going to keep him from being president, et cetera. They've woven them all together into the complete counter narrative. And what we're going to see is that's going to rise to the fore here because of the kind of things that you and I have been talking about the weaknesses of the narrative that the Democratic Party and Mueller are trying to weave together to characterize Trump as a Russian agent, basically. And these two narratives are going to come to clash, I think, in the Senate. Not so much in the House for the impeachment resolutions. The impeachment resolutions will come out. They're going to wait for Mueller's report. There's no doubt about that. They're going to wait for Mueller's report, and then they're going to pick the major bullet points in Mueller's report, and they're going to basically bring these to the House. It'll start, in the late, probably spring. They'll bring this on around March, April, or so. They'll start as soon as he returns his report. And even if Barr tries to hold it back, there's going to be a total storm to stop him from holding it back. The country's not going to tolerate, an edited version of this. They're going to demand all of Mueller's report. Mueller is going to be revealing it step by step, feathering it into the public view in the narratives around each of the criminal prosecutions and the papers that are being filed. But the report's going to come out. The House of Representatives is going to take up the impeachment resolutions. They're going to charge him with the resolutions. They're going to adopt the thesis that is put forth by Mueller, which is going to be this thesis of him being a Russian agent, half-witting. I think that's where they're going to go. You know how Congress is. If you ask for $10 million and the other team wants $5 million, they'll give you $7.5 million. They're going to call him a half-witted stooge functioning on behalf of Russia. And they're going to go with that narrative. And he's actually pursuing the interests of Russia to try to ingratiate himself with Russia for venal business reasons. And
but there is zero proof of this. Zero proof of collusion.
Well, no. As you see right now, that they're getting information now, that they're laboring to get information that his campaign chief was in fact sharing polling data with the Russian oligarchs.
That was public knowledge.
Yeah, no, what I'm saying, Gary, is that they're going to weave together. Prosecutors do this all the time. Prosecutors weave together bits and pieces that they then put into a frame, which they put in front of a jury, and they go with this frame. And that's what is going to happen here. And I think the overwhelmingly, democratically controlled House is going to frame the impeachment resolutions in the same frame that Mueller comes out with his report. And they're going to challenge the still Republican controlled Senate. And they're going to start demonizing each of the senators who is coming up for election in 2020 who doesn't go along with this to get them knocked off in their primary. Okay? And so this is a tactic that's being used by the regular Democrats now. And I'm talking about the Joe Bidens and the Nancy Pelosi's and the Steny Hoyer and the Chuck Schumer. They're doing this now. They're going to come forward and they're going to argue on behalf of the conviction of Trump for this, to have him branded as a bad apple, all as part of an ongoing campaign to get Joe Biden and Kamala Harris elected in 2020. The progressives are going to try to get him genuinely impeached and get him knocked out as fast as possible. And they're going to try to knock off as many of the moderate Democrats as they can around the country, replace them with progressives using the global climate change issue. They're going to use the Green New Deal as a mechanism for ousting people in the Democratic Party who are refusing to take an aggressive enough position against global climate change. And so that there's an extraordinary set of dynamics that are going to be functioning here between now and 2020 that we have to keep our eye on. And so that what I want to highlight here for us, the two battling narratives that are going to go on around the impeachment is going to be the Mueller narrative of Trump being a half-witted agent and operative for Russia. And on the other hand, is going to be this other Falun Gong report that's out now. And I'll get you the name of it. And when you look at it and you watch this thing, it's there's a 35-minute documentary and a 45-minute documentary. It's in two parts, and it lays out this narrative, and it's the full-blown narrative that you're touching on here, that there is a full-scale operation going on the part of the national security state to oust this particular president because of his opposition to a number of things that the major military industrial intelligence complex wants to get done on behalf of the corporations. And
Danny, we're out of time. And I hope that during all this, that we take an honest look at BuzzFeed and their inaccurate statements about Cohen lying to Congress, which Mueller's office called false. CNN blatantly lied about one of Michael Cohen's attorneys, Lanny Davis, stating Cohen would testify about the Trump Tower meeting with Russians in advance. Washington Post, Russian hackers invaded U.S. electrical grid in Vermont. False. Fortune magazine that RT, Russian television, hacked and took over C-SPAN. False. Slate magazine that Trump created a secret internet server to communicate with the Russian bank. False. And then there was also the completely false story, perhaps planted by the national security state, that Russia attacked the U.S. embassy in Cuba with a supersonic microwave weapon. False. So all these false stories, sooner or later, we do have honest journalists left in the United States. They just don't have to work for any of the major media or the networks or the cable networks. Someone's going to drop a dime on the absurdity of this, I hope.
Danny. And there needs to be a careful constitutional narrative that takes the center stage in this here, and it hasn't happened yet. And I agree with you. We have to confine ourselves to what is provable and is true to get him impeached on the proper grounds, not the improper grounds. And I believe that that's going to serve the interests of the libertarian and progressive community in the country. And so that's our obligation between now and 2020, is to get this central narrative to be able to be crafted.
Danny Sheehan, thank you very much, Danny, for being on. We look forward to our next conversation. And Danny Sheehan's websites are RomeroInstitute.org and DanielPSheehan.com. I'm Gary Nall. Thank you all for listening.
Hey, what's up now?
Brother, what's up?
This is a big party, man.
Yeah, brother,
I can dig it.
Stop right on.
Hey, man, what's up?